Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And son, this will be a fun one.
Hey, I'm looking forward to this. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast co-executive director and chief programs officer with Trees Atlanta, Mr. Greg Levine. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon to you.
Well, Greg, before we get too far into this, can you tell us a little bit about Trees Atlanta? How are you serving folks?
Yeah, well, Trees Atlanta has been around since 1985, so we're about 33 years old. And our mission is to plant, protect, and educate people about the importance of trees. And so what we've our focus has developed into over the years is everything from planting to educating people about why trees are important and helping cities and counties actually protect their forests through creating better ordinances and also tree protection.
So now it started out as Trees Atlanta here locally, but it sounds like you're talking more of a global kind of a mission.
Yeah, Trees Atlanta has gone beyond its name. We are definitely in more places than the city of Atlanta, although we love our city. We are now about 10 or 11 different cities around Atlanta. As far out, this year we're actually going to Commerce to plant some trees because they had some need for trees, and we had a funder who wanted to plant there, so we're helping out Commerce this year. But we've planted in Sandy Springs and Dunwoody, College Park, East Point, a number of cities. In fact, we just planted in Clarkston about 150 trees in Clarkston just this past weekend.
So now let's get into the nuts and bolts of things. Like, first, why is that important to do? Why is that a mission worthy of investing time and energy into?
Well, I mean, trees are important for obviously a lot of health reasons. Everything from having clean air and clean water. You know, trees filter out pollution out of the air, help reduce some asthma for young children, and also our older population. They filter out the water. They're the first filter for rainwater. They basically slow it down, get it back into the soil, which gets it back into our groundwater, versus not having tree cover, which means the water hits pavement, heats up, carries pollution that might be on the pavement as well, and it moves into our creek systems fast, which erodes our creeks as well, which, of course, wildlife gets affected that way. So from a health standpoint, very important. But also making the city more livable. Everything from having cool sidewalks and neighborhoods, and as well as just creating the very unique environment that Atlanta has, which is a forested city. We are the city in the forest. It makes Atlanta kind of stand out amongst all the other cities in the country, as that we don't have mountains. Our river is on the edge of the city, and our ocean is very far away. So Atlanta, really, its natural identity, are our forest. And the unfortunate matter is that as the city's developing and has developed over the last, 40, 50 years, we haven't brought the forest to as an equal importance as growth in itself. How do you keep a forest while you still bring more people into a city and a metro area?
Right. So how do you kind of contribute to that conversation? Because, I mean, I've been in Atlanta probably since 1985. And the city was a couple million people, I think, metro area around that time. And now it's probably two or three times that size in terms of human population. So how do you kind of marry that objective with just the fact that so many thousands of people are moving to the city every day?
Well, I mean, the most important thing really is smart urban planning and city planning. And cities have certainly learned a lot over the last 40, 50 years. And now we're getting into smarter development, which means usually density, figuring out density, having public transportation, making them all work together while you're protecting forests. And frankly, we need to be probably preserving more forests, but that doesn't mean we have less people in the city. It means we bring the people into the city in a way that works well with still keeping forest cover. But part of not just purchasing, preserving forests is increasing density and changing zoning and legislation so that you are actually protecting forests, even the way that we do our development. Mm-hmm. And I say the third thing that is really important is that when we do put trees back, we put trees back in a way that allows for diversity, allows for to bring back
diversity of species,
diversity of tree species, allows for us to get trees to actually get to be 50, 60, 70 feet tall and not, you know, which you see often in parking lots, shopping center parking lots where they're, you know, it's stick in a parking lot, never grows, but actually doing the design details so that trees can mature and actually do all the benefits that they do, which everything from shade, cleaning water, cleaning air.
Can you share a story where maybe you had an impact in a development where that they worked with you and you were able to work together and come up with some compromise in terms of you getting some trees and species that were good for you? And also, I mean, you guys have been around for 30 years.
There's
got to be some stories where it worked out.
I think there are some, you know, right now, we actually just worked with a school in Atlanta where, you know, community got upset about how many trees were being removed. And the school board and the development group in the city of Atlanta schools were very interested in trying to preserve more, but they were very limited on this site as an existing building. But they did meet with, you know, they met with us and they met with the community. And they figured out a way to save more trees, but also create a greener, overall greener development, figuring out ways to collect more water on site, using native plant material, which is better for wildlife and actually more interesting for education. And they're also open to put trees back, not just on that site, but around the community as well around it. And that's in the fourth ward, the Martin Luther King District. So that was a great, a really great partnership and collaboration with the school system, the community. And we helped work that out. And it was actually, attention was brought to it by a reporter as well. Who actually brought it up and then help instigate that kind of conversation to go. Also, we've worked in the past in other developments and shopping centers. There's one off Ponce de Leon where there really weren't going to be that many trees added or trees along the perimeter, and Midtown neighborhood really pushed. And we kind of came in and worked with the developer as well to actually get trees back in the parking lot, but it wasn't a complete win because the trees are about the same size as when they planted them because of the limited soil volume. You know, soil volume is important.
Right.
Yeah. You know, good soil volume, good healthy soil volume. I mean, but to be honest, we're working with a number of other organizations right now. I'm not going to get into too much detail about some of them, but to try to figure out better ways to develop the sites. But I think specifically Carter Development around the old baseball stadium. Mm-hmm. Carter's really interested in doing greener development, also figuring out ways to get trees to grow into large shade trees along the streets. They've been a great group that we've just been working with along the way, and they're very early in the process. And what we've learned is if you want to do a better development as far as green goes and having a greener, better forest cover, you know, getting, you know, having those discussions in the beginning, communities having discussions from the beginning that we want this to be a very forested site, needs to be there from the get-go. I think UPS, which I think is on the edge of Sandy Springs.
Right, it's right down the road.
Is that the epitome of a great project where they literally dropped a big corporate campus in the middle of a forest and did a lot to preserve it. And really, probably the biggest loss in that whole project was 400 widening and widening. Mm-hmm. So one of those projects that we always like to tout, and we work with UPS and we actually have done tours around it because people were very impressed when they were building it, and it's just been a great development.
And so it is possible to marry everybody's objectives so that you can have protect the trees and have that kind of that in the forest vibe that you want, you know, from an aesthetic, and also to have the company have enough space to do what they have to do. I mean, if you plan properly, it is possible. It's not like this impossible dream.
It's not an impossible dream, because even if you're clearing a site, you can figure out ways to actually get trees to grow and thrive on that cleared site. It's just making room for trees.
Right.
It's building up in vertical while you're saving forests as well. You can't just build up vertical and not save, you know, trees and in canopy. You want to build up and have pockets of forest that connect throughout the whole city. And that's not only important for filter for water and air, like we talked about before, but it's also important for that wildlife connection, which most everyone enjoys, birds at a minimum. They really need to have that connectivity as well.
And I would think that it also impacts the sound, like, because the UPS is kind of near a highway.
Yeah.
And then to have that many trees around it, it probably buffers some of the sound.
Oh, trees are great sound screen, as well as a sun reflection, you know, trees that are along streets help that reflectiveness that blinds you, you know, the sun when there's no trees around, which people don't notice until until they get into a forested area, like, oh, I can see. But yeah, definitely for buffer. And it's actually an air filter buffer as well. They advise that schools that are near highways that they plant an evergreen screen, not only for sound, but it makes evergreen also is a better for pulling out air pollution as well. So there's a lot of groups that plant evergreen trees just for that reason.
Now, for you guys, are you always looking for volunteers? Are the volunteers people that are like, I like planting and I like to, you know, get play in the mud and that kind of thing? And I think it's important to do. Like, who is the typical profile of a volunteer for your organization?
I like to say there's no typical profile for volunteers. We had over 36,000 volunteer hours, which is equivalent to about 10 to 12,000 volunteers last year. And we work with college students a lot because they, you know, they want to help out on the weekends. Corporations come out and help plant because they'd like to contribute. We love for them to contribute, you know, financially, but they also like to get their hands dirty. So they'll come out. We've, you know, everyone from Mercedes to UPS, Home Depot, they've all come out and help plant almost on a regular basis.
So there's regular opportunities for people if they wanted to plant?
Almost, I would say 4 days a week, we are having volunteer projects.
4 days a week?
4 days a week. And on Saturdays, we have often like 3 to 5 projects.
Simultaneously. What's an example of a project that you would do?
So this past weekend, we planted in Oakland City, which is south of West End. For people who know where West End is, might know better. We planted also in Clarkston.
But what does planted mean?
We planted trees. We planted 15 gallon trees, which are movable by one very strong human being or two pretty strong people. Mm-hmm. And we plant those anywhere from 50 to 75 trees.
So someone donates that to the organization?
They donate money to help pay for trees. Nursery Trade used to donate more, but they've had their hard times in the 1990s. They started having some hard times in 2010. They really can't. Nursery Trade doesn't make that much money. So we actually buy the trees and we get corporate sponsors and individuals to actually.
But how do you target that location to do this planting?
For locations, it's everything from neighborhood community come to us sometimes saying we'd really like to plant along the street. Sometimes it's a city council person. We've even had requests from mayors to actually plant trees in certain areas. And then we have volunteers that actually suggest it. So it comes from the community at large. And a lot of times it's the staff looking for spots where trees are needed or where they think trees are needed.
So this, like you're talking about your staff. So your staff will say, hey, you know, it'd be great if we had more trees in this area. Let's contact whoever owns that land. And then let's see if we can get something going there.
That's often how it's done. And we'll actually talk in Atlanta. We have a partnership with Atlanta. And we work with every city council person's district and ask them where they'd like to see trees. But then we go to they have something called a neighborhood planning unit, where we also go there. We go to neighborhood association meetings and we try to work with the community as much as possible to figure out where they would most likely want to see trees. The city helps fund some trees right now, as well as we raise money around that.
So now you're a nonprofit organization. This is a service you're just providing to the Atlanta, Metro Atlanta area?
Yeah, we're a nonprofit citizens group. And we have the community very much oriented in helping us reforest the city. They actually guide us in a lot of projects as well. We have, again, when I said we had, you know, 12 to 13,000 volunteers last year, we have about 150 volunteers who volunteer with us, you know, 10, 15, 20 times a year. Some of them volunteer every weekend. So it's very much a community-based organization. Mm-hmm. That's the way it started. And there's tree organizations all over the country that do the same thing. There's a group called Tree People that, in my mind, kind of started this whole community citizens forestry group called Tree People. It's in Los Angeles. They started, I think, in the early 70s. So it's kind of how we framed our organization, very much off theirs. It's easier to duplicate and change a little bit for your particular city than create something new.
So what's the most rewarding part of this for you?
There's so many parts that are rewarding to me. I mean, I have been with Trees Atlanta for 23 years. I was lucky in finding this career. I can't imagine being anywhere else. I really love what I do and the people I work with. I love forests. I love trees. As a kid, I was a 5-year-old gardener, and then I would go in the woods and dig up plants. I went into landscape architecture. So it's been kind of my passion for my entire life. So I love that I get to help the city, keep its forest and preserve it, because so many people don't have that as close a connection and have the ability to actually help save their forest as much as someone who actually works for the organization for so long. I really love the community piece as well, and working with so many people that want to do something good. They want to make the change they want to see in the world. So usually it's a very positive group of people, and they don't just talk about doing something; they actually get it done. So I like to see change. And when you think about it, I planted tree. My first trees I planted in 1995. Some of those trees are 60 feet tall. It's incredible how quickly some trees will grow when they're happy, mm-hmm. and planted well. So I feel like the investment that community, friends, and myself have made, it just keeps on growing year after year. And some of the volunteers that have started volunteering with me all those years ago now are in forestry, are connected to parks, forests. They've become professionals that have actually worked for cities now and become arborists. I mean, I feel like as an organization, we've had so much connectivity to get even community people involved. Sometimes they don't think we've done enough and they get more involved. So I think as a catalyst, being part of that catalyst has just been something that I can imagine finding a better career, mm-hmm. and a better organization to be connected to.
Now, for business people that want to get involved in the organization and sponsor things, I would imagine you're always looking for those right partnerships.
Sure. I mean, we love our corporate sponsors, and I just drove past Mercedes, and they've been a great partner for the last number of years. And they're very interested in the environment. We work with corporations in multiple different ways. And some corporations just want to say, have this $1 million and do what you need to do with it. And some of them,
so people say, here's $1 million, do whatever you
corporations,
want.
Corporations, we've had a couple of corporations.
You can sell for us if you can pull that off. I'd like to see that. That's a good trick.
No, it's not a trick. No, maybe not quite $1 million, but I'm waiting for that first corporation to give it. No, but corporations often will help fund projects and programs, even if they're not volunteering at them, because mm-hmm. they want to be connected to the work that we do. But corporations can also come out and volunteer just on a regular Saturday. Usually they want their own project. There's a contribution component with it. It may not be at a $50,000 or $100,000 level, but they'll come out and say, we want to have a volunteer day and we want to sponsor all the trees that day, whether it's $15,000, $20,000 or $50,000.
If there was a company that had their own property and they were on their own saying, hey, we want to re-landscape this area, or we want more trees in it, could they go to you and say, hey, can we do this together so that we're doing this right and that we're doing this the best possible way? We're funded and we'll do all this thing. We want our people to be some of the volunteers, but we open it up to your people as well. Like, is that something that can occur?
Yeah, I mean, we've done similar things like that where we've actually improved tree cover, usually because the community wants it for that for that campus.
Right.
And we have done that in the past. And yes, they'll fund it and their volunteers will come out. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's the warning to silence your cell phone.
Yeah. You should have said that. You're the radio people. We have done that with different corporations. And, sometimes it's the city, City of Dunwoody, we've done a lot of planting for them more recently, because the community has requested it. Mm-hmm. And that's not really a corporation, but they do a lot of development, and therefore, community really wants them to do.
Right. They're trying to be responsible. And so when a company does sponsor, they might sponsor a park or something like that, not necessarily their own campus.
Sure. They often, or a specific neighborhood that they want to, they're more involved in. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of corporate sponsors that want to do more right now on the west side of town, Vine City, English Avenue. There's been a lot of investment over on the west side. But sometimes, like, we've had people who specifically want to do something in East Point or Clarkston, because Clarkston is a very diverse city, and they want, right, to help people of different backgrounds who are people who have just moved into the country.
There's a lot of refugees in Clarkston.
Yeah, a lot of refugees. And sometimes, you know, a corporation will be interested in the environment, but they're also interested in refugees. So where can we plant that, right, that mixes?
And then this is also a community building where you're getting neighbors together and everybody's working together for a common goal.
Yeah. I mean, usually in a project, we have neighborhood people come out. We'll have maybe a corporate group that comes out as college, right, and then individual volunteers as well. So what's beautiful is everybody comes together. People meet each other, occasionally start dating, get married. So all those great things happen, but it also brings people together, and sometimes people with very diverse backgrounds.
Right.
And at a minimum, you get people to go to neighborhoods that they've never been to. Mm-hmm. We were talking about it. We had a meeting yesterday with a group called the Outdoor Activity Center and the West Side Watershed Alliance. And they're like, people don't realize we've got these great forests over here. They've never even been to our neighborhood. And in Atlanta, it's kind of, people stick to their neighborhood. You know, there's a restaurant sometimes and you don't need to leave it. But there are some beautiful places in the city of Atlanta and great neighborhoods that people have never been to. And you'd be shocked to see, you know, 150 acres of forest that looks pristine that you would have no idea you're in the city. And you're like a mile and a half out of downtown.
So where are some areas that we should go that are underappreciated in your mind?
Well, actually, it's fresh in my mind because in that meeting, they were talking, there is a walk going in Cascade Springs, which is in the Cascade neighborhood, which straight down, I think, Ralph David Abernathy or Cascade. And it's a beautiful forest that actually has falls, small falls in it that you would never think you're in the city. You would think you're up in the mountains somewhere. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place. Connolly Nature Preserve in the city of East Point. It's about 50 acres. We actually helped work with the city to resave that forest a number of years ago. And it has giant white oak trees that are about 5 feet across. And also a rare plant called Pink Lady Slipper. A really beautiful spot if you're towards the south side of the city. There's also Beecher Hills. I'm going to get the name wrong, so I apologize for that. That's about 150 acres that the West Side Watershed Alliance helped save about 15 years ago. Another beautiful forest. And there's a lot on the south side of the city. A lot of it's not preserved, unfortunately, but it's about 150 acres, but a forest that I haven't been in that much, but supposed to be pristine. So those are places on the edges.
Right.
But there's Fraser Forest, if you live more in town, Fraser Forest, which is in Kendall Park and Lake Clare. It's about 75 or more acres. And big, huge tulip poplars, very close to Fernbank. You see people walking through the forest all the time. It's part of the Fraser Center, which helps children and people with special needs, I think, as well. So just tons of forest out there. A lot of what we're finding is that there's some forests that people use every day that aren't necessarily protected, which is a challenge in getting those protected.
Now, what's your take on the Beltline?
The Beltline's awesome. It's a great project. Mm-hmm. We actually do a lot of work on it. The Beltline, for those that don't know, is a 22-mile path. It's going to go that goes around the city.
And it was former railroad tracks?
Former railroad tracks, about 8 miles or 10 have been built. Trees Atlanta got involved by saying, you know, this is great. They're going to have transit. They're going to have trails, 1,500 acres of new parks. It goes through like 45 different neighborhoods and connects them. And that used to be the area where people wanted their backs to, fences, anything they could do to keep away from it. Now, you know,
it's the opposite.
It's the opposite. Right. Know, big developments. But Trees Atlanta got involved when they were talking about it. Ryan Gravel was trying to push it through. And we're like, well, why don't we make an arboretum overlay on top of it? An arboretum is a botanical garden that focuses on woody plants and trees. So we really got involved in that environmental component that kind of created.
And that was early on where you could have an impact, right?
Yeah, 2005.
Right.
And so now it's an arboretum, and we do a lot of, we work with Beltline Partnership and Inc. and implementing the arboretum. And we just planted, I think, I'm going to get the number wrong again, 1,500 trees on the west side. We're doing about 15 acres of natural grasses and wildflowers as well, which are great for pollinators and for other wildlife habitat. So it's a fantastic project.
And it really shows where you can have an urban area become a walkable city and still kind of have that feel of you're outside in a nature-y place, but you're also in a city.
Yeah. It's a great place to, you know, you're turning a kudzu field where a lot of not good things happened into basically healthy urban ecology, you know, where you have, you know, trees, grasses, wildflowers, birds actually living in it, other wildlife, everything from, probably shouldn't say snakes, but snakes to squirrels and all, and occasionally you see rabbits. So one day I'm sure we'll see deer running down the Beltline because there are a lot of deer on the west side of the city. Mm-hmm. And once that connects all the way to the east side, we'll probably
going to find the path.
A deer route at night is probably what we'll see. So, you know, a healthy urban ecology where you're, you know, it kind of makes it, the Arboretum hopefully brings, shows people innovation, everything from, you know, how you treat water as it's the most important thing in the world. And you treat it that way as opposed to flushing it down into a sewer and, you know, taking it away, but actually keeping water on site in healthy ways. And also ways to reduce the amount of pavement, whether it's even the transit comes in, we're hoping the transit will be, you know, a rail that actually is a pervious rail versus concrete in a rail. So, you know, a lot of innovation. It's just been a great example. And I think it's had, the input that the city and the TAD, Tax Allocation District, have put in, has been, I think, 7 times the private dollars go back into the area as well. So it's been a great place for innovation. And frankly, it kind of gets the development pushed into one area, which means you're putting less stress on the natural areas mm-hmm. around it. And you're doing what I said earlier was you're creating a developed area that encourages, you know, weaving a healthy urban ecology and weaving forest and native plants throughout the entire development so that it is a better place for wildlife and for people as well. It's just a great example of that.
Right. And it seems like it's getting bigger here in Atlanta, and I'm sure it's becoming a role model in other cities how they can leverage kind of those old railroad tracks.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing it all over the world, it seems, right now, or projects like it, and everything from the High Line. I was in Russia last week, and they had a project that the same developers who did the High Line had done in Russia, and it's
right.
High Line in New York.
Right.
They have a I guess people may not know that. The High Line in New York, the same developer, the same designer did a design in Moscow, and you could see that they had native grasses and, you know, weaving trees into it in an interesting park setting, but still having that real green component of it,
right?
Which Moscow can use plenty of.
So now, what do you guys need more of? How can we help?
How can you help? We need a lot more involvement from the community. I think we certainly always can use volunteers. City of Atlanta and a lot of other cities are really relooking at some of their legislation, ordinances, tree ordinances, to figure out how they can still be developer friendly, but really we are losing our canopy in the end. Right now, development, the way that developments happen is that the percentage of canopy throughout the metro area is definitely being lost. So really coming to the table, supporting changes that help preserve forests while still allowing a million people back in, you know, or half a million people back into Atlanta. It's key that people get involved in projects like the Urban Ecology Framework Project that Tim Keene, the City of Atlanta Planning Commissioner, is trying to get community involved in. They're going to be rewriting the tree ordinance and hopefully in a way that preserves more forest and still allows, again, 500,000 people to move into the city. But other cities are doing that as well. I think it's really important to be involved and stay involved in issues that regarding our natural environment. Often, you know, people kind of can get burned out on it. But, you know, if someone comes out, then other people need to come and join that. And we see a lot of young people getting more involved. I think more young people should be getting involved in at least stating that we want to see, you know, Atlanta stay the city in the forest. And then when I say Atlanta, I'm talking about Metro Atlanta,
right.
Stay the cities in the forest And young people can get involved in that and just being there and continuing to repeat, because it's pretty consistent in the world that, you know, this squeaky wheel gets the oil. There's a million different other expressions to say that, but it's important to not just give up.
Right. You want to be part of the conversation. So you got to show up.
Yep. Show up or, you know, or just complain, which is not really what you want to be.
It's not very productive.
It's not productive. And it's not, who wants that? You know, right. You could go, if you want to complain and show up, that's one
that's
thing.
That's okay.
That's okay.
And but, you are, there's events, like you said, every day, probably multiple times a day on some days, that if somebody wanted to really get in there and with the shovel and dig and plant, there's opportunities to do that.
Yeah.
Every day, every week.
Yeah. Saturdays are we have most projects, but we, if you have either a college or a school group or a corporate group, we do projects pretty much Wednesday through Friday. And then, you know, planting season is just hugely yeah. busy, but we stop planting in April and we start doing mulching and pruning. And we do something called forest restoration, which is removing invasive exotic plants out of the forest. Mm-hmm. So the native plant material can go.
Can thrive. Right.
Can thrive. So we do that all summer. There's plenty of summer work. And we do a lot of projects on the Beltline. But, you know, all this does take money. And if of course, if you don't have the time, we'd love to see the donations and gifts. And we have some big needs that are coming up. We have a education space on the Beltline right now near the Krog Market. And we only have 2 years left in that lease. And we will be building something soon to further to move our education programming to. We've grown a lot in the last 7-8 years to the point where our existing space has been bursting. So we're moving our staff into temporary rental spaces. So at some point, we're going to be building hopefully a big education space and move a lot of our programming there and some of our operations there as well. So at some point, we're going to have a big need for capital.
Like a building fund or something.
For a building fund. But every year it takes, you know.
Right.
When you're in a nonprofit world, every year you're asking for money to do these great projects and programs that you do. So if you're a big corporation, I mean, it'd be great if you just found Trees Atlanta to give to, but there's plenty of great nonprofits out there that can use help.
And that if all of this is on your website, treesatlanta.org?
Yep. If you're interested in volunteering individually, jump onto the treesatlanta.org. You can sign up as a volunteer. You get a weekly email of the 5 or 8 or 10 projects that are going on that week. Plus we have education programming that often will be attached to that. Because we have right now we're in 48 different schools visiting, doing educational programming.
Right.
But we also do education in our actual, we call it the treehouse on the Beltline. And most of that's for adults right now.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Hey, thank you for having me. And I really appreciate the opportunity. And I hope that the community can get out and help any way they can.
All right. That was Greg Levine with Trees Atlanta. Learn more at their website, treesatlanta.org. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.